Okay, we're beginning here, 8 lines up on the bottom of Lamed Bet Amud Bet. The Gemara here is discussing a braita that was brought earlier that said, "Anichnas lechanuto shel nagar shelo b'rishut." Person who enters into the store of the carpenter without permission, v'nitzeh bik'at v'tafchal panav, and some splinter or some piece of wood went flying out at him in the face, umeit, and he was killed by it, patur. V'nichnas b'rishut chayav. If he enters with permission, then the carpenter is chayav. And then the Gemara said about that, my chayav, Amar Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina, chayav bedalet dvarim, upator migalut. So that's the statement that we're actually talking about, the statement of Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina, who seems to be modifying or qualifying the statement of the Braita. So the Gemara originally begins with a presumption that it was talking about the seifa of that Braita. In the seifa of the Braita where it said chayav, Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Chanina came along to qualify it and said, Chayav bedalet dvarim and patur migalut. Now, here we have Rav Papa Mishmei Rava Matni La Resha. He brings that statement of Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Chanina on the earlier part of the Braita. Hachnichnas lechanut shel nagar shelo birshut, v'nitzelo b'kat v'tafklo apanav u'meit patur. So on that first part of the Braita that says, when the person enters without permission into the carpenter's workshop, and then gets hit by a splinter or a piece of wood that shot out, that you are patur. Amar Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Chanina, chayav ba'arba'a dvarim, upatur migalut. If he's injured, then the individual, the carpenter, is chayav to make compensation for the arba'a dvarim, which is nezek, tzar, ripuy, and shevet. Boshet is not chayav for, because that wasn't done intentionally. You need mitkavein to be chayav for that. But all the other aspects of nezek, you are chayav for. On the other hand, upatur migalut. There you're exempted from being sent into galut. Now, seemingly, the reason you're patur migalut is because you're too close to being an ones. It's really not your fault. The guy walked in without permission, and therefore, you weren't going to be sent into galut for that because you're on the spectrum of closer to ones than you are to shogeg. Mara says, mandamat in la seifa. The one who says that Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Chanina's statement is qualifying the seifa, Koshakena Resha, then certainly they would say it about the Resha. Umanda Matila Resha, the one who says it about the Resha, Vala Seifa, and the Seifa Kevin Dibirshut, since he entered with permission, Chayav Galut. Then the carpenter is Chayav Galut. So now, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is, depending on which part of the Braita you qualify, will have implications. If you think the Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina says, in the latter case, where you have permission to enter, your Patur Migalut, then certainly in the earlier case, you are patur migalut. Whereas if you say that it's speaking about the resha, where you're saying in the case where he came in without permission, you're patur migalut, then in the seifa, where he comes in with permission, that chayav could really literally mean that you're chayav migalut. The Tosafot worries about that assumption because he says, mashma, the yota resha krovala ones, masha seifa krovala mezid. If you remember, when the Gemara explained that statement of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, it said, why don't you go to Galut in the latter half of the Braita? If you say he's qualifying that statement, is because you were beyond Shogeg. You were closer to a case of Mezid. And that's why you didn't go into Galut. But that seems to imply that the Resha, which is saying that you are Ones, means that you're much closer to an Ones in the Resha than you are closer to Mezid in the Seifa. He says, V'teima. If you're telling me that the whole reason you're exempt from galut in the Resha is because it's an ones, then certainly you should be exempt from the arba'a dvarim. Because by the arba'a dvarim, we do not penalize you when there is that type of ones or that kind of ones. You might be chayav for the nezek, but you wouldn't be chayav for the arba'a dvarim. The Tosvot requalifies and says, don't think of this as a koshakin or a kavachomer because of the nature of ones versus mezid. Seishmar, delamitam ones patar lehacha, alafishenu dome liyar, kishenichna shalo birshut. The real question is it, how close is it to the paradigm that the Torah lays out of shogeg that goes into galut? The example the Torah gives is the two people enter into a forest, and the one individual is chopping wood in the forest, and whether it's a splinter from the tree or the axe itself goes flying out and hits the another individual and kills him. That's the classic case of Shogeg of Galut. So in that case, both parties have permission to enter into the forest, and so they are equally allowed to be there. The case in the Braita, in the first case, we does not have permission to enter. Therefore, it's very unlike or dissimilar to that case of the Torah. And that's why you have an exemption over there, because of the fact that it's not like the paradigm of the Torah. So therefore, if you say that, then the latter half of the Braita, where it is much closer or looks much more like the case of Yar, where he entered with permission, over there you will be Chayav Galut. So it doesn't have to do with necessarily the character or the nature of whether we say it's closer to Ones or closer to Mezid, but rather about how close or similar the case is to the case that the Torah lays out as the classic case of Galut. Now, as Rashi notes here, the reason that you are Chayav Galut when he enters and he sees him, or why you're Chayav Vele Dalet Dvarim, he says that Hatam Nami Posheyahu, he's still negligent in some way, Kevin de Chazid de Ayel, Ibaile Yune. Since he saw the person enter his premises, even though the person entered without permission, he still should take more caution now, or precaution to protect the individual from being killed. Because if you remember earlier in the Masechta, we already saw it, just because somebody trespasses on your property does not give you the right to do as you please. You just can't kill someone just because they trespassed onto your property. You have a right to ask them to leave. You have a right to go to din. You have a right to protect yourself or your property, but you don't have a right to kill them or to put them in danger. And therefore, there is a certain obligation on this carpenter to protect the individual who entered his property, even though he entered without permission, because he knows that he's there. Once he knows that he's there, he's got to take a certain amount of precaution in this manner. Now the Gemara challenges the underlying thesis here, Mi Chayav Galut. Is it really possible that he's Chayav Galut in the case where he comes in Shelo Bishut? Vatanya, Hanichnas Lachanuto Shel Napach, Venitnazet Nitzotzot. So a person heads into a blacksmith store, and he's working, and there's sparks shooting out. Tafklo Lo Al Panav, and then hits the intruder on the face, Umeit, and he dies Pator. Vafilu Nichnas Birushut. And that's even if he came in with permission. Talking about here where it's the apprentice to the blacksmith. It says, Shulya denafche the miktalokai? Just because you're the apprentice of the blacksmith means that you're a marked man, you can be killed? Where it says, his master is telling him, leave, don't stay here, it's dangerous, get out of here. Ve'enu yotzei. Says he doesn't leave. Says Mushum Durabo Misaribo, let's say it, Lemiktale Koi. Just because you tell him to leave, does that mean now that he's subject to the death penalty because he didn't leave? It says no, Kasavar Yotza. The master thought that he listened, the apprentice listened to him, and he exited from the area. It says Yehochi Acher Nami. If that's the case, why is this unique to an apprentice? It should be true of any party that enters without permission. And then the individual says leave, or even if he enters with permission, he says leave. If the person left and he thinks he left, that's considered to be shugeg. He should go to galut, just like he goes to galut by the case of the apprentice. So too, he should have to go here. So Malay says acher. So in that case, I'm sorry, by the apprentice, where he's exempt from going to galut. So too, by any other party, he should be exempt from going to galut because he didn't know the person hadn't left. He assumed that he did leave. So why are you telling me in the case of the Braita that you bring down that he doesn't go into Galut because it's an apprentice? In our case, we're saying, yeah, he does go into Galut because he's not an apprentice. Why does that make a difference? Gemara says, because, Emta Achar Leitle Emta Drabe. By a third party, he is not fearful of the individual, of the blacksmith. Hayitle Emta Drabe. On the other hand, the apprentice has the fear of the blacksmith. And so therefore, when he tells him to do something and he disappears or he thinks he left, or if he didn't turn around, he assumed that he left, that's because he is considered to be the master craftsman. And therefore the apprentice, of course, followed the instructions of the craftsman and he left the area. So his assumption that the apprentice left is a good assumption in that case because he would listen. On the other hand, by a third party where there's no reason for the third party to necessarily be fearful of him or necessarily listen to him, he can't just assume because he said to leave that the guy left. It might be that he's still there, and he didn't leave yet because he wants to speak to the blacksmith. And therefore, there will turn out to be a difference in the halacha, that if the person enters with reshut, And then the blacksmith says to leave, or whoever the craftsman is says, leave the area, it's dangerous, please leave. You can't assume that the person left. You have to check. You have to make sure that there's nobody there before you begin your work again. And if you begin your work again and they are killed by that work, then you are chayav galut because you're a shogeg. You should have checked. On the other hand, if it's someone who is fearful of the individual and would not violate their word, then when the master says to the apprentice, leave, after he came in with, of course, with permission, then we assume that he left. And even the master himself doesn't have to go and make those checks or those safety checks because he can assume that the apprentice left. And therefore, if something happens, he does not go into galut because his assumption is a good assumption that he left. All right, so now, Rav Zvid Mishmei D'Rava Matni La'aha. So now, Rav Zvid Mishmei D'Rava brought that statement of Rav Yossi Bar Yochanina on this, a totally different case. So this is the third option of where this statement of Rav Yossi Bar Yochanina was said. We had the first two options were on the Braita that we brought with regards to the Nagar, whether it went on the Reisha or the Seifa. Now we have another case, which it says, Umatza, Prat L'Mamtzi Et Tatzmo. When he goes into the forest, it's a case where the individual was found, quote-unquote, by the object that was flying, whether it was the wood or the axe or the handle of the axe, whatever went flying and hit him, that's what found him. Prat l'mamtzi et atzmo. That comes to exclude a case where he made himself found. Mikan amar Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, mi she'atzta even mitachat yado. A person throws a rock, a stone, or whatever it is that he's throwing, and when he threw it, the area was clear. Votzi hala et rosho. Another person, in the interim, after he's released it and thrown the object, walks into that area, sticks his head into that area, viki blah, and it hits him. Patur. The person who threw the stone or threw the object is patur, because at the time that he threw the object, there was nobody there. When the other person showed up, he put himself into the trajectory of whatever he had thrown. Amar Rav Yossi bar Yochanina, patur migalut. He is patur migalut, but chayav ba'arba'ad varim. He still is responsible for the nezek that is done. So because over here, he did nezek, and when it comes to an adam, adam is mu'ad li'olam. So in that sense, he was a posheya because he threw it into an area where people could possibly enter or probably could get into the trajectory of the item. For that reason, he is chayav for the arba'ad varim. He is chayav for all the nezek that is done. On the other hand, with regards to galut, it fails because there's a gzera tekatuv, u'matza, not mamtzi et atzmo. And so for that reason, he's patur mi galut, but he's still chayav in the arba'ad dvarim. And this is on which, or the statement of Rabbi Yossi Rav Chanina was said. Where it says, man damat ileaha, whoever says it on this case, kol shekena kamaita, for certain would say it on the previous case. Man damat ileaha kamaita, the one who says it on the previous case, by the nagar, avalaha patur legamrei. Over here, he would say he's patur legamrei, meaning that he considers this case to be much more of an ones than the case of the nagar, the case of the carpenter. In the case of the carpenter, whether he had permission to be there, the other party, for sure there, you consider that to be much less of an ones. Or even if he didn't have permission to be there, still, if the carpenter saw him enter or the blacksmith saw him enter, he should have taken certain precautions in that instance, even though he entered or trespassed without permission. And even again, if he told him to leave, still he has to take the precaution to make sure that he did leave. But over here, where the individual, when he threw it, there was nothing going on, and all of a sudden somebody showed up and got in the way, that's not something that is as foreseeable or as obvious a problem as the case of the Nagar. In that case, why is he patur from the Arba Dvarim? Is because he's classified as an ones. So if you look at the bottom line of the Rabbeinu Chananel in the previous Amud, the Rabbeinu Chananel explains over there, l'inyan nezikin chayav, l'inyan dalad dvarim patur. There is, by the dalad dvarim is patur, because he was completely unaware of what was going on. We can't make him responsible because he lacks any kavanah whatsoever. He doesn't have any connection to the nezek. It was completely unbeknownst to him that it happens. But here, the Rabbeinu Chananel says, vafilu anus chayav benezek. You're still chayav for nezek. Echin da amrei rabbanan behejeb petza tachat petza. Chayev ala shogeg b'meziv aones keratzon. So the Rabbeinu Chananel says that even in cases, we'll call it aones gamur, where you are patur from the Dalet Dvarim, you're still obligated in the nezek aspect of it. She says, that idea of Adam Muad Beolam supersedes any ones that's only with regards to the nezek aspect. The Arba Dvarim are still covered by the ones Gamur, and that's why you're exempt for the ones Gamur. On the other hand, with regards to the nezek, you will be obligated over here, and that's what he means, that you're patur mi Dalet Dvarim over here. On the other hand, the Rambam and others believe that the tour over here is a complete tour. When we say that you're patur by onis gamur literally means onis gamur. And therefore, you're patur not only from the Arba Dvarim, but you're also patur from the Nezek. So now the Gemara says, Tan Rabbanan, Po'alim shiba'u litboa scharan mi balabait. You have these workers that are showing up at their employer's house, and they want to come and collect their wages. Midachan shoro shabalabait. And when they come in to collect their wages, they sure, if the balabait goes ahead and gores them, nashchan kalbo shel balabait, or they get bitten by the dog of the employer, umate, and they die from that altercation, patur. The balabait is patur. Achemim umrim, b'shaim po'alim litboat scharam mi balabait. Others say no. The po'alim have a right to come and collect their wages from the balabait. It says, hey chidami, what exactly is the scenario here? A scenario here. Idish chiyaf b'mato. If the individual normally is in the city, maitaima d'acherim. What's the reasoning behind d'acherim? Meaning that if he's in the city, or he's normally at the shuk, then they should go and approach him at the shuk, or they approach him when he's out of his house. When he's in his home, that's his private domain, that's his personal space. You don't come to his personal space to collect your wages. You come to collect your wages in the place of employment or the place where he's found. So if he comes out to the city, he's out in the shuk a lot, then that's where you should approach him. If he's normally found in his house, and he doesn't really leave the house so much, then my time at the Tanakama, then of course they have to go to his house to collect their wages. How else are they going to get their wages? They have to go there. And therefore, why does the Tanakama say that the balabait is patur? It says, L'tzricha begavra d'shchiach v'lo shchiach. It's a case where he sometimes is in the city, sometimes is in his house. The Karya Babu. So they come to the door and they knock on the door. Vamalahu in. And he said to them, yes. Marzaver in ul tamashma. One of them says, when you say yes, it means come in, enter, come in, you know, come in. Umarzaver in kumaduchtach mashma. The other one says, no, when he says yes, it means he wants to know who's there. He's not telling you to come in. He's telling you to tell me or give me more information about who's there, but you got to stay where you are. So therefore, the machloket revolves around that case where they have quasi-permission to be there because of the fact that the balabait is sometimes in the house, sometimes in the shuk. It's not obvious where they can find him. So they do have a right to come and at least approach him at the house. But when they come and knock on the door and he says yes, then the question is, what does yes mean? Does yes mean yes and enter? Or does yes mean tell me more, or who's there? And that's the machloket in the Braita between the Tanakam and the Achirim. Tanya Kamandamar in kum aduchtach mashma. There's a Braita that supports the one who interprets in to mean stay in your place. The Tanya. Poel shenichnas lidboas charomi balabait. Poel that goes to collect his wages from the balabait. V'nakcho shorosho balabait o nashcho kalbo patur. Afopi shenichnas birushut. Even though he goes in with permission, if the animals of the balabait attack him and he's killed by that, the balabait is patur. Am I patur? How can it be patur? If he has permission to be there, why is he patur? Elalav, the Kari Abavo, he was knocking on the door, v'amar lay in, and the balabait said yes. Shmamina, in is kuma duchtach mash. When he says yes, he doesn't mean come in. He means wait there, I'm going to come and deal with you, or, you know, identify yourself, tell me what's going on. So now, the Balei HaTosafot here point out that the reason that it has to be that he's shchiach sometimes here and not there is because the Balei HaTosafot connect between the two items. The question of where the balabait is found and the rights of the po'alim to come and collect their wages are connected to those two things. So if you look in the Tosafot, he says, Betanyo, Keman Damar Kaya Duchtach Mashu, says, Va'korchach, b'shchiach v'lo shchiach. It has to be a case where he sometimes comes into the shuk and sometimes is in the house. Di b'shchiach, if it's always he comes out of the house, z'lo haya kore, then this person wouldn't come to the house. Nichnas birushut. I mean, z'lo haya kore, nichnas birushut. He wouldn't have permission to go there. The pshita, the kuma duchtach mash. For there, it's for sure means stay there, and I'm going to come out to you. So what the Balei HaTosafot say, and you can see it in the previous Tosafot as well, he says, ish shchiach, if he is shchiach to come out, pshita lei de kuma duchtach mashma. Then he clearly means, stay there and I'm coming to you. Vilo shchiach, and if he doesn't come out, then im kein vadai, hu mashma. Then he definitely means, come in and get your wages. So what the Balei HaTosafot are pointing out, they not all Rishonim do this, the Rabbeinu Chananel doesn't seem to do this, but the Balei HaTosafot connect between the two items. The laborers have a right to collect their wages. The only question is where and how they collect their wages. So what the Gemara is suggesting is that when the Baal Bayit spends enough time out of the house, they should approach him out of the house. If they do come to the house and knock on the door, when he says yes, he definitely does not mean come in. He means, wait there, and I'll take care of you outside of the house, like you should have come to me outside of the house. I'm outside of the house enough. On the other hand, if he's always in the house, and he's barely outside, then clearly the wage earners here have a right to come to the house to collect their earnings. But then when they knock on the door and he says yes, they can assume that he means come in, because he's always found inside the house, and that's where they're going to go collect their wages. The question only comes up in this in-between stage, or in-between situation, where he sometimes is in, sometimes is out. So that's when there's lack of clarity about what the yes means, and a lack of clarity about where the Poalim have rights to go and collect. It's only when you have that case of uncertainty do you have this machloket about which way it goes. So according to the Balei HaTosafot, he correlates between the two items. You could have easily separated between them and said, look, if there's a person who's always outside the house, then that's where you got to meet him. You don't have a right to knock on the door. It doesn't matter if he says in, not in. You don't come there at all. He's always in the house. Of course, you have to come to the house to collect your wages. So it doesn't matter about the knocking, whether he says in, not in. Of course, he means come in. The question about the knocking on the door only comes up in a case where it's not clear where to go, or in any scenario, possibly. When they knock on the door, what does in mean? Maybe it's not correlated with the other machlokot at all. Tosafot correlates the two machlokot together and says that wage earners have a right to come and collect, but you have to look at the circumstance about how great their rights are to enter the house versus stay outside of the house. All right. Next Mishnah moves us into the dinim of Shvarim and Tam and Muad. Here the Mishnah says, Shnei Shvarim Tamim Shechavlu Zedze. You have two oxen that were Tamim, and they injured each other. Now, obviously, the case is either that they were going at it with each other at some point, simultaneously, or it can be in a case where one injured one, and then the other one came back later and injured the other. But it obviously is not a case where one of them is defending itself against the attack of the other one, because if he's defending himself, then any damage he does to the other one is simply in defense. And, of course, the owner of the shore that was attacked is not responsible for his shore defending himself. So here you have these two tamim that had altercations between them, and therefore each of the owners owes the other owner for the damage done by their shor. Mishlamim b'motar chatzi nezek. Then you pay the differential, 50% of the differential. So it's the equivalent if ox A and ox B have altercations with each other, and therefore ox A owes a certain amount of money to B, and B owes a certain money to A. So in that case, if you took 50% of what A owed to B, and 50% of what B owed to A, and then you netted them against each other, you'd come out with the amount, or the net amount that was owed. If instead, you simply take the total damage that was done, and subtract them from each other, and take the differential in the damage that's done, and multiply that by 50%, you'll get the exact same number. Doesn't really matter how you calculated it, but this way, we'll see that there are nafkaminot for this, but the way this calculated is not to take 50% and then 50% and subtract them, but simply subtract the full damage and then take 50% of that difference. Again, you'll come out with the same answer no matter which way you do it, but this is the way the Mishnah tells you to do it. Shneim muadim, mishlamim b'motar nezek shalim. Same thing is true if they are both muad. If each one of them does damage, the other one does 100 of damage, the other one does 50 of damage. You take 100 minus 50, the differential's 50. The one who did the 100 of damage pays the 50, the differential amount. Echad tam ve'echad muad. A case where one of them is a tam and one of them is a muad. Muad b'tam, if the muad's damage exceeds the damage that the tam did, mishalem b'motar, the excess damage, he pays nezek shalem. Tam b'muad, if the damage done by the tam exceeds that of the muad, mishalem b'motar chatzi nezek. Then the tam pays in the excess amount chatzi nezek. Now, what's interesting here is the Baalei HaTosafot say about this Mishnah that the Mishnah seems completely unnecessary and there's no chiddush in the Mishnah. And that's because of what I told you before, the math works out the same whether you multiply the damage by 50% on each side and then net the numbers. Or if you take the differential and multiply by 50%, you'll end up with the same thing, meaning that 50% of x minus 50% of y is the same thing as 50% of x minus y. And the same is true by, or even more true, by Nezek Shalem. If you're netting the numbers, it's the same as that one paying all the amount and one paying the other amount, and then the difference between them, of course, is that which needs to be paid. The question really comes up in this case that we discussed over here, and here lies the Chiddush. It's machloket in the Rishonim between the Rosh and the Mukah Yosef, which way the Chiddush goes, but seemingly, I'm going to go with the interpretation of the Rosh over here, that what the Mishnah is saying over here is that before we get down to whether you owe 50% or a whole, we're going to net the entirety of the damage that is done over here. That means that in a case where you have a shor muad and a shor tam that get into an altercation, even though if you took it at face value the way that you would assume, which is the tam owes 50% of the damage and the muad owns 100% of the damage it did, so then you would multiply 50% times the damage that the tam did, and then you would take the whole damage of what the muad did. If you subtract them from each other, that will tell you how much each party owes, if it's the tam or the muad's owner that owes the money. What the Mishnah suggests over here is that we net the damages first, and then only then look at whether you pay the 50% or not. And that actually turns out to be to the benefit of the owner of the muad, or to the sense, the detriment of the balatam here. And that is because, for instance, if there's damage done, say even in a case where they each do damage of 100 to each other, in the case where if you took the tam says, look, I only owe you 50% of damage, that's 50 shekel. So now you as the muad owe me 100 shekel because you're full damage, you owe me 50 shekel here. On the other hand, if we do it the way the Mishnah suggests, we'd say 100 of damage, 100 of damage, they net out to zero. And therefore, neither party owes anybody anything here because the net is zero. And that's what the Mishnah is suggesting. That is a big chiddush in the Mishnah, and that might be exactly why the Mishnah is discussing this, because this is the Chiddush is that we net the damage before we decide whether you're chayav chatzi nezek or nezek shalem. The first thing we do is look at the totality of damage here, net the two amounts against each other, then determine who has done more damage. If it's the tam that did more damage in that case, he pays 50% of that net differential. If it's the muad that did more damage, then he pays 100% of that differential. But we don't first multiply the damage that the tam did by 50%, because that would give a huge advantage to the bala tam. We don't do that. We either net them up front. That's the way the Rosh learns it. The Nemuka Yosef learns just the opposite. That's exactly what we do. We multiply by 50% first, and therefore goes to the advantage of the short time. And to me, the Mishnah sounds much more like what the Rosh is suggesting over here, but that is a huge chiddush out of the Mishnah. Mishnah continues and says, V'chein shnei anashim shchablu zeh b'zeh. You have two people that are fighting and they injure each other. Again, this is a case where they are doing this simultaneously, or it happened at sequential times, but it's not a case where someone's defending themselves against the attack of another party. Mishalmim b'motar nezek shalem, you pay the differential in the damage done between the two parties, nezek shalem. Adam b'muad, u'muad b'adam. What happens if a shor muad attacks a man, or the other way around, meaning that you have them fighting? Then, mishalem b'motar nezek shalem. And you pay the differential, since by Adam HaMazik, as well as Shor Muad HaMazik, both of them pay Nezek Shalem, and then you're going to pay the differential and the damage done, between the damage done to the Shor and the damage done to the Adam, whatever the excess, and whoever owes that will pay then in Nezek Shalem. Now then, Adam B'Tam, B'Tam B'Adam, if the altercation happens between an Adam and a Tam, then Adam B'Tam, Mizalek B'Motar, Nezek Shalem. If the damage done by the person to the shore exceeds the damage done by the shore to the Adam, then that excess amount the Adam pays Nezek Shalem for. On the other hand, Tam ba'Adam, if the excess damage was done by the Tam, meaning the Tam did more damage to the Adam than the Adam did to the shore, Mishalem b'motar chatzi nezek. Then the excess amount of damage, he pays 50% of that amount. Rabbi Kiva omer, af tam shechaval b'adam, mishalem b'motar nezek shalem. When a tam attacks a person, he's going to pay, in that altercation, the differential is going to pay 100%. This is what the Balei HaTosafot suggests, maybe is the chiddush of the whole Mishnah. The whole Mishnah was unnecessary except for the sheet of Rabbi Akiva, which we'll see in the Gemara. But other than that, he thinks maybe there's no chiddush in the Mishnah. We discussed what the Rosh said, that I think there is a chiddush in the Mishnah of the netting of the Nezek before you multiply it by the 50%. So now the Gemara comes to explain the Shita of Rabbi Akiva versus the Shita of the Chachamim or the Tanakam over here. By the Psukim of Eshor Shenagach, the Psukim in Parshat Mishpatim end with Im Kofa Yushat al Azazir. O Bani Gach, O Bati Gach, Ki Mishpat Hazeh Ya'aselo. That if it's Eshor that is doing the damage here, this is the mishpat that you will do to him. So now the Gemara says of that. Tarabana, ki mishpat ze yaselo. Ki mishpat shor b'shor, kach mishpat shor b'adam. What does it mean, kach mishpat? The similar rules apply over here by a case where they injure a person. So what it says, the Gemara says, is that the similar principles that apply between an altercation between a shor and a shor, so too, those same dinim applied to a shor that damages an adam. Ma shor b'shor, tam shalem chatzi nezek, muad nezek shalem. Av shor b'adam, tam shalem chatzi nezek, muad nezek shalem. So just like the rules by a shor muad pays full nezek, a shor tam pays chatzi nezek. So too, by a shor tam that injures an individual, they will pay chatzi nezek. And a shor muad that injures an individual will pay nezek shalem. Rabbi Akiva omer, like the latter one and not the earlier one. What Rabbi Akiva is speaking about is the way that the psukim lay out. The psukim there that precede that pasuk, kimishpat hazeh yaselo, start out, ki gach shor et ish o et isha, vameit. And then, dot. Ve'im shor nagachu is the next pasuk. If he's a shor muad, mitmol shushom muad bebalav. So the way the psukim lay out is the first instance is a shor tam that kills a person. Then you have a shor mu'ad that kills a person. And then it talks about the kofar that you pay in that case. Then right after that it says, O venigach, o vatigach, kemishpat hazeh yaselo. So that similar din will apply. If he injures a person, the similar din will apply. What's the similar din? Well, the way the chachamim are learning it is everything you said before. The difference between a shor muad and a shor tam that exists, that same differential will exist in injuries that are caused to people by a shor. Now then Rabbi Kiva says, no, kimishpat hazeh, hazeh means that which was just mentioned beforehand. The last thing mentioned before this pasuk is a shor muad. And that means that whenever there's injury done to a person, it's always classified or treated like a shor muad, and you pay nezek shalem. Now the Gemara says, Yocho Mishalem in Aliyah. So then Rabbi Kiva continues and says, well, now if he's deemed to be a shor muad when he damages the individuals, meaning that he pays Nezek Shalem, so now you would think that maybe there's no cap on liability. Remember, a shor tam only pays me gufo. The liability of the mazik is capped out at the value of the shor that did the damage. Whereas when it comes to a shor muad, there's unlimited liability. So you would think now that you pay Nezek Shalem in this case, you also have unlimited liability. Tamalomar yaselo migufo mishalem veenu mishalem min aliyah. So he says because mishpat hazeh yaselo lo means only out of the goof of the shore, meaning lo referencing the shore or the liability of the individual here is limited or capped out at the value of the shore. So therefore, you don't pay unlimited liability, only up to the value of the shore. Vrabonan ze lamali. What do the Rabbanan do with the word zeh? Because obviously Rabbi Kiva is learning zeh to teach you what was right before, not the whole case before. So what do the Chachamim do with it? It says, the potro me'arba'ad dvarim. To say that a shor is not chayav in arba'ad dvarim, is only chayav in nezek. V'Rabbi Akiva le potro me'arba'ad dvarim minale. How does Rabbi Kiva know that you potro me'arba'ad dvarim? Nafkale mi'ish ki'itein mum ba'amito. Because the psukim that discuss the obligations of individuals in Sefer Vayikra begins with the case of Ish Kiten Mum Bamito. It's when somebody injures another person. Ish Bamito Velo Shor Bamito. Those obligations there where it says Petza Tachat Patza and all of those Limudim that teach us about the Arba'ad Varim, those are found in a context where it says one person injured another person. It's a person injuring another person, not a shore injuring another person. V'rabbanan imi'ai, if it was that, hava mina tzar luchude, that's only dealing with tzar. Hava ripoy v'shevet eima litein le. Maybe when it comes to doctor bills and unemployment, he would have to pay for it. So now, the way that Rashi learns this is that I would have thought, hani mila tzar luchude, mishum delo chaser be memona, because that's a chiddush. The fact that you have to pay for tzar, and the fact that you have to pay for boshet, if you look in the Baya Tosafot, they add in boshet here as well. Tzar and boshet are intangible items or damage that is done to the individual, which involves no monetary loss. It's suffering and pain and embarrassment, but they themselves engender no physical damage or monetary claim for any diminution in value. And so therefore, you would think that the exemption that says that it's not applicable by shor is only for those items that are chiddush that you pay despite the fact that they have no tangible damage associated with them. On the other hand, as Rashi notes, if a ripoy v'shevet, the chaser bei mamona, those are monetary losses, emek nezek ninu, they should just be an extension of nezek. They're just the bigger picture of nezek. Nezek involves different components. Nezek involves the actual physical damage, it involves the unemployment, it involves the doctor bills. And so those might be subsumed under the category of nezek. So that's why the Chachamim say, I need two dinim. One to teach me that the Arba Devarim don't apply, but that part of the Arba Devarim are things that are the intangible items, or the non-physical damage items. Then we need a second pasuk to teach us that even the items that are closely related to nezek, like Shevin and Ripoy, that you're also patur from, and that's why you need two psukim. That's the way Rashi phrases it. On the other hand, the Balei HaTosafot say that, well, maybe it only has to do with the things that are relevant, which is what he points out over here, Tosafot points out over here, Tema. Kimishpat shor b'shor, kach mishpat shor b'adam. Don't the Chachamim learn that whatever the din is for a shor to another shor is the same din that you have a shor to an adam? And from that, you would have also known that there's no arba advarim. Because the shore doesn't pay for unemployment to another shore when he damages him. He doesn't pay him for doctor bills. He doesn't have to pay for any of this stuff. He pays for the diminution in value. That's all he pays. So if all he pays is nezek, if I'm telling you the way the Rabbanan learn, that we learn out of a shore that did damage to another shore, that all you pay is nezek, then certainly by shore that hits or damages an adam, then he should only have to pay nezek. What do I need all these other psukim? V'yesh lomar, d'zeh ein l'mod mishum d'gabe shore, Lo shaychi arba'ad dvarim. By the shore, the four dvarim are not applicable. Tzaru boshet leka. Beripoy v'shevet avuklal nezek. He says, because tzar and boshet are not relevant to a shore, and ripoy and shevet are within or subsumed in nezek for a shore, because it's all about the diminution in value. You don't have to pay for the doctor bills of the animal, because you can simply say to the guy, sell it at the price now, and I'll pay you the differential between the price that it was worth before and the price now. That's all nezek. Now that by an adam, you can't just say, oh, I did damage to you, I'll pay you for the nezek. You have an obligation to bring the person back to their full health. You can't just say, sell the guy, and we'll determine what the value differential is. No, he has to be brought back to his full health. So for that reason, since it's not relevant by a shor, that's why here you would have thought, again, that maybe these have application by Adam, because by a shore, they're not relevant at all. We won't even discuss them. But, and so therefore you would say, oh, the exemptions are tzar and boshet, which have no application. Ripoy and shevet have no application, not because they don't have application, but because they're subsumed under nezek, and they're not relevant by the shore because they're all included. But by an Adam, where they're separated out, maybe over there, even though you say k'mishpat ashur, maybe there you would have to pay them to the person, because they can be separated or segregated from the nezek, even though they're part of the nezek, but they're a different category now, so maybe you would have to pay them. And that's why I need limudim to exclude these cases and say that adam is patur in these cases. Right now, the next mishnah. Shor shaveh maneh Shnagach shor shaveh 200. If a shor that's worth 100, that attacks or damages a shor that's worth 200. Ve'ena nevela yafa klum. The nevela is worthless. No tell at the shor. The person who was damaged, the nizak, collects the shor. Because the shor tam here did 200 dinarim worth of damage, 200 zuz worth of damage. He's going to pay for that 50% capped out at the value of the shor that did the damage. The shor that did the damage is worth 100 zuz. That's exactly the amount of damage that he did. The nizak can go ahead and take the shor. The reason being that the nevela, the carcass, was worthless. Since the carcass is worthless, then the damage is full damage, the full diminution in value from 200 down to zero, and he can take the shor. So now, what's the Mishnah telling us? That is not such a big chiddush. The bigger chiddush is the interpretation of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel of the Mishnah, which is Matnitan Mani. Who is the author of our Mishnah? Rabbi Akiva. It's definitely offered by Rabbi Akiva, the Tanya. Yushama Shor Bebeitin Divrei Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says you cannot go and just take the shor of the mazik for the damages that were done. You don't have any rights of ownership over here. You first must go to Beit Din and have Beit Din assess the value of that shor and then grant you a right to collect out of that shor. They will grant you a shibud or a lien on it to collect out of it. Rabbi Akiva Omer, huchlat ha-shor. Rabbi Akiva says it's done. As soon as the damage is done, the nizak has rights to the shor. He becomes basically a shutaf, a partner in the shor immediately. How immediately is not clear. The Balei Tosafot and the next Amud and other Rishonim discuss this, whether it's from the moment of Nezek, it's automatic, you get a shutafut in the animal, or does it mean that once Edim testified to the fact that there was damage, before Beit Din takes any assessment, then you automatically become an owner over here. So it's not clear where that threshold is, but there is a threshold before you end up in Beit Din, and before Beit Din assesses the value, where the Nizak becomes a co-owner of the shore. But my kamiflegay, what is their machloket? Rabbi Gishmal Savar Bal Chovhu Vizuze Udamasikle. Gishmal says that when you were injured or damaged, or your property was damaged by the shor, you become a creditor. And the creditor only has rights to collect cash. You might have a lien on the animal, but you have nothing more than a lien. Your first rights and your only right is to collect cash from the person that did damage from you. How you get that cash, or whether you have collateral, that would be determined by the shor. Rekiva Savar Shutafeninu, you guys become partners. You are now partners in the shore. Now, that probably comes out from the way that the Pasuk explains the way that you deal with a shore tam, which is that when you have a shore tam, the Torah tells you, v'chatsu et kaspo, that they sell it and then they split the money, which makes it sound like they're partners or owners in the shore mazik, and then they split the money. And that's what Rekiva is saying. They're literally partners in it. The Torah is speaking to the Beit Din to go ahead and sell the animal and then divide the proceeds between the Mazik and the Nizak. The Torah is speaking directly to the Mazik and the Nizak and saying, you should sell it, meaning you, the plural you, should sell it and then split the money's between you, because you now are partners in this animal. My benayu. What's the nafkamina? Whether you go to Beit Din and you have to then get them to grant you the right to it, or according to Rabbi Akiva, that you automatically have a right. Even according to Rabbi Akiva, where you have an automatic right granted in the animal, doesn't mean you can just walk off with the animal. We still need an assessment of the value of the animal. We still need to know how much value you're walking off with. So even Rabbi Akiva will agree to that. So what is Rabbi Akiva saying that's different than Rabbi Shmuel? It says, Higdisho Nizak Ika Benayu. If the Nizak is Makdish the animal, is it Kodesh? In the case for Rabbi Shmuel, the Nizak, the injured party here, has no ownership rights in this animal. And if he's Makdish it, doesn't do anything because there is the ownership of the Mazik that is there. The ownership of the mazik is the only thing that is there. You might have a lien on it, but other than that, you have no rights here. On the other hand, for Rabbi Akiva, where you become a partner in the animal, then if you're makdishit, you have such a right to makdishit because you own and you're a part owner of the animal. You can be makdish, your portion of the animal. Now, what's very interesting about this is, we paskin, we saw this early in the Masechta, that when it comes to Chatzi Nezek of Atam, there were two options, as had explained that. There was a Deya that it was Mamona, and a Deya that it was Knas. And we paskin, like the Mandamar, that Chatzi Nezek is considered to be a Knas. And we know that Mode B'Knas is Patur. So how could it be that now, if the individual, the Nizak, goes ahead and is Makdish, his portion of ownership in this animal, we say it goes through, despite the fact that if the Mazik decides to be Modeh in the whole thing, the Modeh B'Knas is Patur. So how does that work that he can be Makdish something? So there are different approaches within the Rishonim to deal with it. Tosafot on the next Amud says, Ikebenayu, the Rabbi Kiva Kadosh, Afagav di Modeh Miftar B'Knasu Mikomakom, Hashta Milohode. All he says is, he hasn't done it yet. He hasn't admitted it yet. If he admitted to it, sure enough, that would wipe out the Knas. But until that point in time, it is Kadosh. And that's how the Balei Tosafot deal with it. They basically say, Ein Hochanami, if he's Modeh B'Knas, it would wipe the whole thing out. But in the interim, since he hasn't admitted to it, and he hasn't been Modeh B'Knas, the Ekdesh works or takes effect. There are other Rishonim who say that the Knas that is associated with the short time is different than any other Knas that we know about, because the Knas by short time is always beneath the value or the true value of the item. Other Knasot that we speak about are things that are not connected to the value of the item at all, and sometimes they can exceed it, and sometimes they can be below it. And in that case, Modeh B'Knas is Patur. But in a case like the Chatzi Nezek of a short, which is a Knas, over there, maybe it does not have the normal rules of Modeh B'Knas Patur, just because of the fact that it's always below the value. Since it's always below the value, maybe that regular rule of Modeh B'Knas Patur does not have application over here. Or, the third way to look at it is to say that, yes, Modeh B'Knas Patur works, but where the individual is Makdishit, he basically prevents you from now being Modeh B'Knas to make it Patur. Because since it's his, and since he was Makdishit, he took away, or in a sense, blocked your right now to be Modeh B'Knas and Patur. Those are different ways, three different ways that the Rishonim deal with the fact that Modeh B'Knas Patur, and yet we're allowing the Nizak to be Makdish, the animal of the Mazik, or at least what he owns in the Mazik, even though the Mazik has a certain amount of control still over that. Balei Tosafot say, yes, he has control, and if he exercises that control, it would wipe out the Ekdesh. Others suggest he doesn't have that ability to be, or he doesn't have that control. And there's that middle position that says he has control until you're Makdishit. But once you're Makdishit, he doesn't have that control anymore to be Modeh B'Knas and be Patur. But just want to point out also that Gemara only gave one example of Ika Benayu. There are plenty of other examples, he says, that you can come up with nafkaminot between them. But the idea of Hekdesh demonstrates, or is the best way to demonstrate ownership over here, because Hekdesh requires balut and real ownership in order to do it. And so that highlights the difference between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva over here, whether the Ekdesh goes through or not. All right. Ba'imine rova mi Rav Nachman, machro mazik. If the owner of the shore that did the damage sells the shore, li Rabbi Shmuel mahu. According to Rabbi Shmuel, what is the din? That's clear. According to Rabbi Kiva, the sale can't go through because they're partners and he has real ownership here. So the mazik can't sell it because it owned or it belongs to the nizak. According to Rabbi Shmuel, you have a different scenario here. You have a scenario in which it still is in the possession of the mazik, but on the other hand, the nizak has a lien on it. So that's what the Gemara is asking, or this is the query of Rova mi Rav Nachman. According to Rabbi Shmuel, Mao kevin dam Rabbi Shmuel bal chovu v'zuzehu demasik le'machur. Because he's just a creditor here, and the shore is simply collateral, but it doesn't, he has no ownership in it. What is done. If he sold it, it goes through. Odilma, or maybe, Kevan Demishabid Le the Nizak. Since the Nizak has a lien on this shore, Lav Koko Mine. He does not have a right to go sell it when there is this lien that's outstanding. Samalei Enu Machur. He says it's not sold. He has a right to go take it back from the buyer because he has a lien. And his lien preceded the sale when he's allowed to go take it from that lien. Vahatanyo Machru Machro Machur. Don't we have a bright that it says if he sells it, it goes through and it's sold? Or it says, Choser Vigoveo. Yes, it's sold, but then he can go take it away from the buyer. Vichima achar shechoser vigoveo, lama machor. Wait a minute. If he can go and take it back from the buyer, then what's the point of saying that the buyer bought it? If the creditor can always go and take it back, then he didn't really sell it because the lokeach never has possession of it. The Gemara says, no, he does have possession of it, l'ridya, for plowing. That means the way that the Rashi spells it out here is, he says, shim charash bo lokeach, eino dotein d'mei acharisha l'nizak, that if he plows with it and used it in the interim, he does not have to pay the nizak, the damaged party who's going to take this animal in the end as compensation. He does not have to pay that individual. Because it was sold to him, he can use it in the interim when it was sold to him. And then when it's taken back by the party, the nizak over here, that's it. He takes it back. He doesn't have to pay for the plowing that he did in the interim. The way Rashi states it over here is only im charash, b'diavad. If he plowed with it, then that's the case. Groyer notes that the Rambam and the Rashbo pirshu charosh bo lechatchilo, that the buyer here has a right to plow with it. He can plow with it as long as the creditor or the nizak here doesn't come and take the shore away from him. He has a right to plow and do whatever he needs to do with it because he bought it. In essence, he bought it and he can utilize it until it's taken away from him. Then Rashi says that he doesn't have a right to use it, but if he does use it, he won't owe money from it, for it. That's a difference in the opinions here. Rashi thinks it's only a bidyavad case, whereas the Gra is pointing out here that both the Rambam and the Rashbo think that it's the chatchila, you have a right to use it or utilize it in the interim, even though technically it was sold to you by the mazik and it really belongs to the nizak, when the nizak has a lien on it over here. So Gemara says, wait a minute. Based on what you're saying now, we have a conclusion. Shmamina, loveu mecher, metaltalim, beitin govim loho mehem. From here it sounds like if you have a debtor who sells off his possessions, not real property, but he sells off his metaltalim, the beitin can go after them to make collection from them. Well, wait, that's a big deal. We don't know that that's the case, and we believe that beitin doesn't have a right. Meaning that our assumption is that when people lend money, they lend money on collateral they believe that will be there in the end, and collateral that they can go after. And the way the Gemara verses it, that's real estate and real property. Metaltalim move or disappear, and therefore a person doesn't count on them for his repayment or for the lien that is placed on them. So based on that, Beitin only goes after real property, does not go after metaltalim on behalf of creditors. Based on what we're seeing here by the shore, it makes it sound like Beit Din is going after the shore, which is metaltalin, to collect on behalf of the creditor. From that, you would conclude that Beit Din can go after metaltalin and not just after real property. The answer is shiny. Hotam keman da aso putuki dami. By the case of the shore, it's as if he made him into a directed collateral. The Gemara talks about a putuki in many places. Generally, when you have collateral, a lien on something, you have a lien on all of these properties or generally on anything the individual owns. On the other hand, sometimes the debtor will give directed collateral to the creditor. In that case, he has a higher hold on the item because that's his only means of collection is this directed collateral. And that's what the Gemara is saying over here. It's different over here because the shore, after Beit Din says you owe the money and we assess the value, because encumbered to the individual to the point where he has a strong and focused lien on here. Because again, he can only collect out of this animal. Since that's a focused and directed collateral, we don't say that when he sells it, it goes away and Beit Din can go after those metaltalin to take it back. On the other hand, when it's not directed collateral, they won't be able to do that. Mar says, wait a minute. Vamarovo, asavdo putuki umecharo bachov govea menu. If he made his evid into an aputuki, and then he sold him, the creditor can go after the evid and collect it. Shoro aputuki, if he made a shore into a directed collateral, umecharo, and then he sold it, ain bachov govea menu. He doesn't have a right to go and collect from the shore. So you see here that the shore, when it's even as directed collateral, you can't go after it if it's sold. So why are you here? You tell me a Beit Din could go after it to collect on his behalf, this shore. Your answer is, wait a minute. Evid, my taima, what's the reason by a servant or a slave that we say that if he sells it, you can go after that collateral if it's directed collateral? Mishom de'it le'kalo. Because it's a publicly or well-known thing. And since that's the case, the buyer has to beware, or the buyer is knowledgeable that he knows that this Eved is subject to a directed lien. On the other hand, when it comes to a shor, a directed lien on a shor is not something that's well known or well publicized. And so for that reason, you can go after the Eved when he's used as directed collateral because of the fact that people are aware that he's collateral. If they buy it, they buy it knowing that risk. And then by the shor, where it's not well known, then when the buyer buys it, he's unaware of the fact that he's buying something with a directed lien on it. And that's why you can't go after it. But over here, our scenario, Kaven Denagach Kala Itle, the Torah Nakachana Karule. Here where the ox gored, he takes on a different status and he becomes known as the goring shor, the goring ox. That is something that is also well known, and therefore again it's buyer beware, because the buyer has that information or should be aware of that information, because this is information that is now in the public domain. He is now filed as a shor nagachana. And so it's similar to the Eved in the sense that it's well known, and if the buyer buys it, he buys it at his own risk. Etani Rav Tachlifa Bar Marova Kamed Rabbi Abo. So Rav Tachlifa Bar Marova means Ben Eretz Yisrael, means that he's from Eretz Yisrael. Kamed Rabbi Abo. Macharo Ein Machur. Yagdisho Mugdash. When he sells it, it's not sold. But if he sanctifies it, he makes it into Kodesh, it works. Machro Man. Who sold it? Ile Ma Mazik Machro. The person who did the damage, or is sure that did the damage, he sold it. Ein machor, it's not sold. Mani, who's that like? That's like Rabbi Akiva. Damar huchlat ashor, that they became partners. The mazik and nizak are now partners in the shor, and therefore the mazik can't sell it. Vigdisho mukdash, but now if you're saying that if he's makdish it works, atan the Rabbi Shmuel. That sounds like Rabbi Shmuel. Damar yusham ashor bebeitin, till beitin puts the lien on there, the mazik has full ownership, and therefore he can be makdish it. So now you have an inconsistency in the din based on what we're told here. Ella, what's the case? Nizak mecharo. The case that Nizak sold it. Eino machur. If you say now when Nizak sells it, it doesn't go through the sale. Mani Rabbi Shmuel. That is Rabbi Shmuel that says that it still belongs to the mazik. And therefore, the Nizak sold it. He didn't have a right to sell it. Higdisho mukdash. On the other hand, if the Nizak is makdish, it goes through. Atan Rabbi Kiva. That sounds like Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Akiva is the one who says that you have rights and ownership over here. So the olam mazik v'divrei hakol. No, it's a case here where the mazik sold it, and that's why it doesn't go through. But if he's makdish, he is makdish. Why? Micha roeinu machur afilu the Rabbi Shmuel. Even according to Rabbi Shmuel over here, where the mazik has full ownership, if he sells it, it's not a good sale. Behind Mishab Dele in the Nizak, because there's a lien of the Nizak on the item. And therefore, he shouldn't be selling it. And if he does sell it, we're going to take it back. Higdisho Mukdash. Now then, if the Mazik is Magdishit, Afidu the Rabbi Akiva. Even according to Rabbi Akiva over here, it's Mukdash. Mishom de Rabbi Abau. Because of the din of Rabbi Abau. Dama Rabbi Abau. Gzeira Shema Yomru Hekdesh Yotzei Below Pidyon. You might think that Hekdesh can be redeemed without having to put up any money. So every year in the end, the truth is that the mazik, because of the lien of the nizak on this item, can't sell it. And if he sells it, we're going to reverse the transaction because he had no right to sell it. By hekdesh, should look exactly the same, which is that if the mazik has sufficient ownership in order to sell it, then he should have sufficient ownership to be makdish. If we're telling you now that he doesn't have sufficient ownership to sell it, because the shibud here, the same thing should be true with regards to Hekdesh. That the Hekdesh should not have the ability to go through when there's a lien on it. And the Gemara says, you're right. It doesn't go through. The shibud blocks the Hekdesh from going to effect. Well, then why are you telling me if you're Makdish, it is Mukdash? The answer is because you're not allowed to take it back from Hekdesh without paying them some de minimis amount. That's based on Rabbi Bo's din, that we don't want things going out of Hekdesh with people thinking that you don't have to pay for it, or that you don't have to redeem it. So therefore, you have to make some token payment here in order to redeem it, even though Meikar Din, it's not really Kadosh. Now, this question of Rabbi Abau relates to a bigger machloket about the ability of Hekdesh to overcome a lien. We know that there are certain things that undermine liens, We learned this in other places. One of them is chametz, going into Pesach, shichrur of an eved, and the other one is hekdesh. Those three things are able to be mafkia midei shibud. So the answer, according to most Rishonim, about why that does not have application over here when you're makdish it to release or ruin the shibud is because hekdesh only works when you're makdish kedushat aguf. When you're makdish the animal to end up on the mizbeach, that is a strong enough hekdesh to wipe out a lien on it. But if you're just makdish it for its monetary value, the damim, that won't work. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Tam has a shita that no matter what type of hekdesh you use, that will wipe out a shibud. So this Gemara is a big problem for the Rabbeinu Tam. So here the Gemara says that if there's a lien here, the lien blocks your ability to be makdishit. Rabbeinu Tam says that whenever you makdish something, it wipes out the lien. So how come it doesn't wipe out the lien over here? The answer the Rabbeinu Tam gives is that al mu'a the shibudei. The Chachamim strengthen the lien that the Nizak has over here. That's a concept that the Gemara in Gittin and other places discusses, that in certain instances, the Chachamim, in order to protect the injured parties, strengthens their lien or their ability to collect. And that's the same thing over here, the Rabbeinu Tam says, is that even though technically the Hekdesh should overcome the Shibud and wipe it out, the Chachamim instituted over here that it should be a strong enough Shibud to block Hekdesh and not allow Hekdesh to go through. The other Rishonim, they're just going to say, over here was Hekdesh Damim. There's only Hekdesh Damim. It doesn't have the ability to overcome the Shibud. Right now, the Gemara is going to quote a Braita. It's a very long Braita and a somewhat cryptic Braita. And then the Gemara is going to go back after it brings the whole Braita and discuss it line by line to explain it. So now the Braita begins. Tarabanan, short time shezik. You have a short time that does damage. Achelo amad bedin. Before it ends up in court, machro machur, if he sells it, it's sold. Hekdesho mukdash, if he sanctifies it, it is kodesh. Shachato v'natano b'matana, if he shechs it, or he gives it as a gift, mashasa asui, what's done is done. Misha madbedin, once he already ends up in beitin, machro eno machur, if he sells it, it doesn't go through the sale. Hekdesho eno mukdash, if he sanctifies it, it's not kodesh. Shachato v'natano b'matana, if he shechs it, or he gives it as a gift, lo asa v'lo klum. He did absolutely nothing. It's a meaningless transaction. Kadmu balei chovot, if there were other creditors here that came v'gbio, and they took it for collateral, or they collected on their collateral here. Ben chav achlo ezik, whether the creditors preceded the damage that was done, ben ezik achlo chav, or whether the damage and the liability for the damage preceded the chovot, lo asu v'lo klum. They did nothing. Lefish ein mishtalim ela migufo. Because he only pays out of his guf. Muad shezik, on the other hand, when you have a wild ox that does damage, bench amad bedin, bench lo amad bedin, this is whether he ended up in court or didn't end up in court, micharo machor. If he sells it, it's sold. Hekdesho mukdash. If he's makdish it, it goes through. And the hekdesh. Shachato, if he shechs it, v'natano b'matana, or he gives it as a gift, mash'asa asui. Whatever is done, is done. Because it's a shor muad. And by shor muad, the obligations are not directed out of the body of the shor himself, but rather the people who are backing it that take on full liability. Kadmo balei chovot v'igbiu. If the creditors come and collected it for their debts up front, ben chav achlo ezik, ben ezik achlo chav, no matter what the order is, whether the creditors preceded the damage that was done, whether the damage preceded the creditors, mashasa soy, whatever is done is done. Because over here, the liability or the liens exist beyond the item themselves, but are the obligation of the owner to fully make payment or restitution over here. So therefore, if the mazik, or the owner over here, does whatever he does with the shor, he's still on the hook for the damages. On the other hand, by gufo, when it's getting paid out of the animal itself, over there you do have limitations, because if the animal goes or is sold, then you have no recourse. So over there, we're going to have different rules than versus over here, where you're paying out of the aliyah. So amamar. So here it goes. The gemara goes back to the beginning of the braita and begins to explain it. Micharo machur, the radio. When we say that what's sold is sold, that is the Raja, that's the concept that we spoke about above. What's sold is sold doesn't mean that it's permanently sold. It just means that the buyer here has a right to plow his field in the interim while he's holding on to it. Hikdasho mukdash mishum derabi abo. When it's hekdesh, it's mukdash, not because it's really mukdash, but simply because of the din of Rabbi Abo. That once you put something into hekdesh, we're not going to let it go out without making some token payment to hekdesh. Shachato v'natano b'matana mashasa asui. If he shechted it, what's done is done. Or if he gives it a gift, what's done is done. Bishlamo natano b'matana. If he gave it as a gift, mashasa asui the radio. You can explain what's done is done is similar to when you sold it. Before, when he said you sold it, you didn't really sell it because he has a lien and he can come back and collect it. So what did he really sell him? The right to use it in the interim, to plow with it in the interim. You can say the same thing with a gift. The gift can be given and then you can go and take it back, or they can extract it from the giftee because he wasn't really entitled to it. But what he does get, or why it's called a matana, mashasa asui, is because he can use it to plow with in the interim. Because of the fact that the Gemara here mentions the nafkamina of Ridya, which was what we mentioned before within the Shita of Rabbi Yishmael, and therefore the Rashba believes that this Breita is following the Shita of Rabbi Yishmael. On the other hand, the Rambam says that this Breita even follows the Shita of Rabbi Akiva, and that happens to deal with the Shita, who believes that even according to Rabbi Akiva, the Chatchila, the buyer here can use it for Ridya, even if the Mazik sold it, and the Nizak is a shutaf or has rights here to the point where he should be able to block the sale. The Rashba, even though he thinks that that's true by the position of Rabbi Yishmael, that Chathchila, the buyer, can use it, does not believe that that's the case by Rabbi Akiva. So that same machloket as to exactly what Rabbi Akiva's position is with regards to the buyer's right to utilize it for Ridya will influence who they think is the author of this Breita. The Rashba says that Rabbi Akiva believes that the Lokeach can't do anything with the Shor, according to Rabbi Akiva, obviously believes that this Breit is according to Rabbi Shmuel. On the other hand, the Rambam, who believes that even according to Rabbi Akiva, the buyer has a right to use it to plow in the interim, therefore this Breit can also follow the Shita of Rabbi Akiva. Ela shechat leite velishtalim mibsarei. On the other hand, if he shechs the animal, why is the mazik losing out over here? When he shechs the animal, now you have a dead animal here that's good for basar, that can be sold and can be monetized. So why doesn't he get anything out of that? Or why do we say, mashasasui, what's done is done? What's done is done doesn't mean anything because he can sell it and they can monetize it. Gemara says, Ditanya, chai en li'eli chai. That's only when he's alive that we say that you pay out of the goof of the animal. Shachato minayin, if he shechs it, how do we know that you still have to pay out of the goof of the animal? Tamalomar macharo at the shore. That they sold the shore, mikol makom. Doesn't matter what the status of the shore is, whether it's alive or dead, they sell it. And whatever value they can garner is then placed into the pool to determine what the mazik owes over here. So Amar of Shizvi lo nitzucha ela lepchat shchita. No, the reason that we're saying this is because there is a loss of value from the animal being alive to the animal being dead or shechted. That while the animal is alive, it's worth more than when it's shechted. And this individual, this mazik, when he shechted the animal, then he diminished the value of this animal. That diminution of value is too bad, or mashasa asoi. What's done is done. And therefore, you can only collect out of the goof of the animal, but the carcass, basically, now of the animal, whether it's kosher meat, if you sell it as kosher meat, if it's a nevela, you sell it as a nevela. But you can only collect out of that because the shibud that you had was only on the goof of the animal. And when he shechs it, he's basically shechting your animal. And therefore, the loss incurred is because that's the only place you can collect out of, that will be a loss that you'll have to incur. On the other hand, whatever you can sell it for at that point in time, you have a right to collect from in order to get your compensation. And there's a cap on the liability here from the shore itself. So the cap now is a lower cap only because he shechted the animal and he reduced the value of the animal. So Amar Avuna Brei de Rav Yeshua, Zot Omeret. From this you would conclude, HaMazik Shibudo Shel Chaveiro Patur. Someone who damages a lien of a party, he is Patur. Because here, he did no direct damage to the individual. It was a result of his actions that did the damage. We have the same thing over here. When you shecht the animal, there is a loss in value over here, but the loss in value is to someone who only has a lien on the property. And so therefore, what you conclude from here is that the fact that you have a lien, or the nizak has a lien on the mazik's animal, and when the mazik shechts it, it's too bad. Basically, what we're saying is when you hurt someone else's shibud, that you are patur. Pshita, Gemara says, I don't even need Rav Huna Brave Yeshua to teach me that, because that's so obvious from the case here. No, by the case of the Shechita, I can say to him, Lo chasertich velo mide. He says, I didn't cause you any loss. Damalei, zika ba'amahu deshak leminach. I just took the air out of the animal. So I really didn't cause any real loss to you. I simply removed the living aspect of the animal. About bi'alma, in general, lechayev. But in general, where you do physical damage to the prop, the lien, the item that you have the lien on, maybe over there you should be chayav. Kamash v'lon, that is the case, that's not the case, and you're patur, even when you do real damage to the collateral. Where it says, Hanami Rabba Amra. What are you talking about? Rabba already said this. Why do I need you, Rav Huna, to teach me this? Rav Huna Brei Yehoshua, to teach me this when Rabba already said this. Rashi right away says, so what, that Rabba said it? Rav Huna Brei Yehoshua is an Amora. Rabba is an Amora. So Rav Huna Brei Yehoshua learned this item and he said what he said. Why does it matter that Rabba also said it? So Rashi says something very interesting and very important. Here he says, Rabba Adam Chashuv Haya, Adam Chashuv, come on, Rav or Rabba, Pachinan Ki'ilu Ketuv B'Mishnah or Breika. That the Gemara views Memrot of Rav and Rabba having a unique status like that of a Mishnah or a Breita, which is that we assume Amoraim know the Mishnayot and they know the major Breitot that were probably in the Beit Midrash of Abchi and Rav Oshayim. What the Gemara says now is that those Amoraim also know the Memrot of Rav and Rabba because they are such central figures or Amoraim that we assume they would have known this. And therefore, the Gemara is questioning Rav Huna Brei Yeshua from a statement of Rabba. That's the way Rashi explains it. Others suggest that the reason they're asking from Rabba is we're trying to understand how is it that Rav Huna Brei Yeshua is making this statement when he's aware of Rabba's statement. And the Ozer Rishonim show that Rav Huna Brei Yeshua was aware of this position of Rabba. Despite being aware of that position, he still says Zot Amerit, and he tries to make an inference from this bright over here, rather than simply quoting Rabba. The third way to learn this is that Rav Huna Brei Yehoshua is a Talmid of Rabba. And therefore, Rav Huna Brei Yehoshua is going to make a statement like this, and he knows that his Rebbe made some similar statement about this exact concept, he should have quoted his Rebbe, rather than saying in his own name. So for that reason, the Gemara challenges Rav Huna Brei Yehoshua from Rabba. And Rabba says here, Dama Rabba, Asureif Shtarutav Shel Chavero Patur. Person who burns the, we'll call them, bearer bonds of his friend, he is patur. The bearer bond gives you the right to go and collect money and to be paid. If you go and burn those bonds, you are causing him a loss because he will no longer be able to collect. But you didn't cause him direct physical damage or loss. The loss that's created here is only through, we'll call it loosely, grumma, because you burnt some paper. And it's because you burnt some paper, it happened to be that that paper had some important information on it. But when you burn that paper, you're only burning paper. The loss that's caused is because of what was written on the paper. And therefore, Rabba says you are patur in that case. Mao de tema, what would I have thought? Hotam nu amarle niyara ba'alma kalai minach. All I did was burn some paper, so you have no claim against me. Avahacha or hecha. The chafer ba borot shichimu ma'arot. I would think when he goes into a field and starts doing real physical damage to the field, which is collateral, he starts digging holes, making caves, and all those sorts of things. Maybe there he would be chayav for physically destroying the collateral. Kamash malan from Rav Huna Brei Yehoshua that even in that case you are patur, even when you directly damage the property. Dahaka. Because over here, our case over here is command the chafar ba borot shechim v'arot dummy. When you shech the animal, that's the equivalent to digging ditches and all those other items inside of the field. V'gamar mashasa asui. And the Gemara says what's done is done. So therefore over here too, when you go and dig in the field, what's done is done. Now, the Gemara's conclusion therefore is that in all these cases you are patur, and similarly that patur is connected to what Rabba says, which is that a sharef starotav shechaviro is patur. What Josh pointed out before is correct, that this concept, or what Rabba claims over there, is that this is a din de garmi. It's not grama, which is indirect, but a more directed cause of damage, but you're not, the actual physical damage isn't caused by you, but your action is directly correlated to the loss. Your burning of the paper causes the loss over here. And even though you're only burning the paper, and as a consequence of that, he can't collect, nevertheless, you burnt the item that actually allowed him to collect. That's really called Dine de Garmi. And Rabba believes in Dine de Garmi that you are patur. And that means this whole Gemara is following the sheet of Rabba, that Dine de Garmi is patur. But we who paskin not like Rabba, and that we believe that Dine de Garmi are chayavin, then over here you would be responsible for the damage that is done to the collateral of the individual, because it's Garmi. And in the cases of Garmi, you are chayav, the way that we paskin against that position of Rabba. Umar continues and now discusses the next piece of the Braita. Kadmu balei chovot v'igbiu. If the creditors come and took the animal before the nizak had a chance to take his money or collect from it, ben chav achlo ezik, ben ezik achlo chav, whether the debt was taken out before the damage or the damage happened before the debt, lo asav lo klum. They didn't do anything. Because he only pays out of his body itself. Bishlama, I understand, hezik achlo chav, that if the damage was done before the creditors extended credit, then nizakim kadmo, then the damage happened first, and the nizak is really the first creditor here, and therefore he gets first rights of collection. And that's why he can block the other creditors from coming and taking it. Aval chav achlo hezik bachov, if the case is where the creditors had the first rights, or they lent before the damage was done, then bachov kadim, they were first. And if that's the case, why shouldn't they have a right to collect from this animal? Why do we say, whatever they did was nothing? Vahafilu, and even in the reverse case, shehizik achalochav, where it did damage first, and then the creditors extended credit, bachov kadim, there you're going to tell me that the Bachov goes first? If that's the case, then Shema Mina, I would conclude from here, Bachov Me'uchar Shekadam VeGava, MaSheGava Lo Gava. This happens to be a Machloket in other places in Shas. If you have multiple creditors on an individual, and he has limited collateral, and one of the later creditors, meaning someone who lent after other people had extended credit, goes in there and grabs the collateral, is able to keep the collateral because it technically has a right to the collateral because he's a creditor. Other than that, he doesn't really have full rights to the collateral over here because of the fact that there are other creditors that precede him. So it's a machloket whether we take that back from him or not. Based on our brayta right here, you would conclude that he has to give it back. Because we're saying when the nezek happened first and then the baal chov came afterwards and grabbed it, we're saying we're giving precedence to the lien of the nizak, enough so that we block the creditor's right to collect over here, even if he grabbed it. Gemara says, well, then we have a conclusion to that machloket, which is very interesting. That Shema Mina, Bachov Mukhar, Shekadam Gava, Ma Shegava Lo Gava. Gemara says, lo. Lo Lemelecha, Ma Shegava Gava. That in a normal instance, the later Bachov, if he grabs the collateral, he keeps it. The shiny autumn. And over here, our case, or the case of the bride that we brought, is a little different. Damale ilu gabe chava, la mina chava gabe, says, had it been with you, wouldn't have I collected it as well? Dai Torah, da azkan mine, mishtalmano. Because the shore that did the damage is what I collect from. So this is what I think, Fred asked before, that according to Rabbi Akiva Shita, where the Nizak and the Mazik, in a sense, become partners in the animal, doesn't that make it that now the Nizak has a certain amount of culpability or liability here? And the answer is yes. And that's what the Gemara is saying over here as well. The Gemara here is saying that what the creditor can say What the Nizak can say to the creditor is, even if you were before me in line, okay, very good. You're before me in line. That means that, let's take a choice. We could have two choices here. Either the debtor owns this animal, or you own this animal. I don't really care who owns the animal, because the animal did damage to me, and I have a right to collect out of the animal itself for my damages. So you can choose who's the owner of the animal, irrespective of who the owner of the animal is. The animal did damage here, and I'm entitled to collect out of the goof of the animal. So you want to tell me you were first? Right? Gesundheit, take the animal. But once you've taken the animal, now you're responsible for the damage that it did, and I can collect out of you. And that's why over here, none of the transactions go through, or the balei chov, or the creditors that come and collect over here, don't have any rights, is because, in a sense, the person that's damaged has a super right over here, which is that the ownership is not relevant, because the damages come out of the goof of the animal. And since they come out of the goof of the animal, who owns it is less important than his ability to get a hold of the animal. As opposed to the case by Muad, which as we'll see in tomorrow's daf, but by the Muad, the ownership is important, because whoever owns it is the one who's liable for it. And therefore, then, who has the rights, or first rights of collection over here, would make a difference. But in our case, because of the fact that the Nizak has right of collection out of whomever was the owner, therefore it doesn't really matter whether the Baal Chov was first, the Nizak was first. In either case, he has rights to come and collect, because he just confiscates the body for the payment of the damage that is done. The Baal HaTosvot point out, even more so, that if he really, the Baal Chov really has a, it's his ownership, then certainly the Nizak has a right to collect over here, because then he's Poshea B'Shmirato. So where it says, V'yesh Lomar D'lo Kamar Ela Klomar, he's not saying literally that the creditor took possession of it, but rather he's saying, if you took possession of it, Dein Gov Ashor Meshubad Baal Chov K'moshu Meshubad HaNizak. All the Gemara is demonstrating through this is just showing who has a stronger lien over here. And it's showing that the Nizak has a stronger lien because of, had it been so, or had this been the situation, then the Baal Chov would be just as liable for the damage that's done as the current debtor is for that damage. Rashi over here takes it much more literally and explains it that if the Baal Chov took it, then it doesn't really matter. His ownership doesn't change the fact that the animal did damage. The Baal Tosafot say that, no, you can't say that, because if he really owned it, then he's a poshea b'shmirato, and it's obvious that the Nizak can collect out of it. But rather, this is just a theoretical scenario which says that, had this been the circumstance, then I would have been able to collect out of you, the creditor. So now that it's still with the debtor, I have first rights or first claim here, because irrespective of who owns it, I have rights of claim. And not that it literally happened or the case actually happened in this manner, but rather because that would be the situation, therefore he gets this higher level of lien and right of collection that supersedes that of the other balei chov. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Lamed Daled Amud Aleph.